following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn, Opelika, sports leader. Happy Friday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this May 15th, 2026. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. No Christian Griffin for hour number one. He will be in studio for hour number two. He had a couple of things he needed to take care of. I believe he's going out of town, and so he had to do a few personal things, and we totally understand. He'll be in the studio hour number two. I will not be in studio for hour number two, but don't worry. We got our good buddy Trip. We got Trip Upton in the studio for both hours. How are you, sir? Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. Almost as perfect as weather you can have for a ball game today.
Yeah. I mean, it's beautiful, man.
I know. So I'm. Did we not want to do the roll call today like at the baseball game last night?
No, we do not. No. I don't like it when Yankees fans do it. I don't like it when Auburn fans do either. Yes, happy Friday. Man, we have a ton that we're going to get to today, including that Auburn baseball game from last night, and try to, I don't know, try to break it down and discuss it as much as we can. There's only so much you could talk about in a 2-1 baseball game.
Yeah,
only so much you can say. When Auburn scores first, Georgia hits two solo bombs on two breaking balls, or two changeups that Jake Marciano would like to have back, and the offense decided to quit playing after the first inning. That's pretty much it. So, yeah, we'll talk about that today. Plus, we'll look around the other series in the SEC. Plus, we have some Auburn basketball news and the transfer portal. Technically, it is a portal edition. Auburn adds a grown man from overseas. We'll talk about that guy, what he brings to the Auburn basketball team. And then you and Christian in hour number two are going to get into some fun talking season conversations.
Yes, in hour number two, we'll get Christian's thoughts on the baseball game last night and kind of previewing the game tonight. Andres Alvarez on the mound, Dogs and Tigers both looking to get their bats going. We'll talk all about that, as well as a fun conversation at a CBS Sports graphic that we saw about a fan base patience meter with year one head coaches that include Lane Kiffin, Alex Golish for the Auburn Tigers, John Summerall for the Florida Gators, Kyle Whittingham for Michigan. We break it all down, and that's what we're hoping to do in hour number two. But if you want to be on the line for the first hour, phone lines are open.
Yes, they are. 334-321-1390. Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. Your thoughts on Auburn baseball from last night as the Tigers dropped game one to the Georgia Bulldogs by a score of 2-1. You can give us a call. Your thoughts, 334-321-1390. Or you can shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. We'll also talk a little high school baseball today because I get to go to SEMO Field. Reason I will not be in studio for hour number two is I'll be heading over to SEMO Field on the campus of Auburn High School as the Tigers host the Red Devils.
A tale as old as time between these two teams. And I feel like Auburn, there's no way that hosting a Final Four after you beat them in the regular season at home
to no go, way it can go wrong.
To go play potentially Thompson. I mean, there's no way that goes wrong.
No, that hasn't happened already this athletic season.
At least it's not a Bulldog. It's the Red Devils.
I don't know what's worse. The Red Devils are worse. Yeah. Auburn and Central tonight, man, does not get any bigger than this in the 7A baseball semifinals. It is Auburn and Central, Tigers and Red Devils. Auburn High gets to host after beating Enterprise this week. And so really looking forward to that. I'm going to have that broadcast for you over on 96.3 W. Lee. 5 o'clock first pitch for game one. Game two scheduled for 7:30. That could fluctuate just a little bit. And then the if game would be tomorrow night at 5 o'clock. So we'll talk a little bit more about that coming up as the show goes on. But we do begin with whatever it was against Georgia last night for Auburn University. Tigers fall to the Dogs by a score of 2-1. And what everybody has been talking about, and rightfully so, is welcome back Jake Marciano, first of all. My prediction yesterday wasn't 100% accurate. Wasn't that far off, though,
no.
Tripp. Wasn't that far off.
No.
I said on the way out yesterday that I thought Jake Marciano was going to have his best start of the season yesterday. That was my prediction, was that he would have the best start of the season, having to trump probably the Texas start where he went 7 full, gave up, I think, 4 hits and 1 solo shot homer in that Texas game. He was pretty close, though, in this game. Final numbers for Jake Marciano. He goes 6 complete, 4 hits, 2 runs, both of them earned, 3 walks, 5 strikeouts. Both runs given up, as I mentioned, were 2 individual changeups that just kind of hung up, and Georgia did what they do, and they hit bombs.
Right. It wasn't like they were getting runners into scoring position and threatening all night long. It was 2 solo shot home runs was the difference between Auburn winning and losing this game. You hold the Georgia Bulldogs to tied for their season low in runs. Tied lowest since end of March for Florida in that Florida series.
Mm.
And you lose. How does that happen?
Not only did Jake Marciano pitch extremely well, because even with the 2 solo shots, he went 6 complete innings, giving up just 4 hits, 2 runs, only 3 bases given up, and 5 strikeouts. Jake Marciano did his job. Jake Marciano did exactly what you needed him to do. And then you pair that with not a questionable decision, but one that raised an eyebrow or two from us and the group that we were standing with on top of the War Eagle Wall. Auburn went to Jackson Sanders. And we're going to talk offense in just a moment. Again, there's not a ton to talk about, but there's a lot to complain about there. Auburn went to Jackson Sanders. And at the time, the discussions we were having were, okay, you're losing right now. You're down 2-1. You're going to Jackson Sanders to keep it where it is because of how dangerous and how lively that Georgia offense is, right? They put Jackson Sanders in to try and keep it where it was, and my goodness, that's exactly what he did. 3 complete innings, 3 hits, no runs, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts.
Yeah, if you were to tell me in game one that both Georgia and Auburn are going to play each other, and there's going to be 4 combined pitchers.
Yeah.
The Dogs had Joey Volko go 5 innings, Matt Scott in a long save with 4 innings of work. Both of them had 6 strikeouts. Looking, Marciano and Sanders had 5 apiece. So that's just such a big factor, is that Jackson Sanders is a guy that could start on a majority of teams across the country. It's probably at the very worst, a Saturday guy.
Yeah.
And has done that for Auburn in the past. Coming out and throwing, again, like most of the batters he's facing, he's only giving up 3 hits in 3 innings of work. That just shows what depth that Butch Thompson and this team have. And a lot of people were concerned, like, hey, if you're using Jackson Sanders now, won't you need him for games 2 and game 3, especially if it goes to a rubber match? that's just going to be an interesting conversation and storyline to watch throughout the rest of the weekend out of the bullpen.
Yeah, and so Auburn uses their ace. Auburn uses their go-to reliever in long relief form. They both do their job, and yet the offense lets Jake Marciano down again. Auburn scores first. Auburn scored early in the first inning. 1-0. Auburn got a guy on. They got him in. That's what they did. And after that, they were just like, we're good. Kick your feet up. Have a good time. Enjoy the cool weather on a Thursday night in Plainsman Park. And Auburn's offense just went silent. Trip, 4 hits in a 9-inning baseball game. An SEC team had 4 total hits. And, buddy, this was not because of what Georgia had on the mound. I'm sorry. It just wasn't. No disrespect to Volko or to Matt Scott. They weren't doing anything spectacular.
Right. And there was a couple plays where Auburn, I wouldn't say got unlucky, because you look at, I believe it was, I want to say the 5th or the 6th inning, there was a just barrels it, but it's a line out to the shortstop who legitimately does the Michael Jordan logo and reaches right up.
He did.
Jumps
he leaped
up,
out the ballpark.
And which, I mean, which is an incredible play.
Yeah.
But if that gets over his head, that's probably down for a double, seeing where kind of we were. There's not a lot of luck there, but just something that, you know, and you looked, another thing, they squandered a lot of opportunities when, like, you had a leadoff walk twice.
Yeah.
And with no outs. Neither of those innings they scored a run.
Yeah, no, that you're right about that. And I also think about the Chase Frelick hard hit single right into the gap in center field, and the center fielder played it perfectly. What should be a double was held to a single, and I believe Frelick was left on base in that inning.
Correct.
So, yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where Auburn never had, you said Auburn never had enough guys on base. There was never enough traffic. There were not very many stress pitches thrown. That's something Christian and I talk about all the time. And I'm sure we'll talk about it tonight on the Auburn High Sports Network. There just wasn't a whole lot of stress pitches for the Georgia starter. And he was comfortable out there. And the few times Auburn had an opportunity, they didn't do anything with it outside of the first inning. But man, you get 4 hits in a game, you're not going to win. I don't care what level that you're at. You get 1 hit from Mason McCrane, 1 hit from Chase Frelick, the one we talked about, 1 hit from Chris Rembert, 1 hit from Ethan Bingaman. But you have Eric Guevara go 0-for-4. You have Bub Terrell go 0-for-4. Brandon McCrane goes 0-for-3, right? Gregorio was 0-for-1 because he came in and pinch hit down the stretch. Eddie didn't do anything. He did draw a walk, did Eddie Madrigal, but Bristol Carter, 0-for-2. So, like, you just didn't get any level of production, and it
hurts. Especially looking at, like, you could say, okay, well, maybe they were getting walked, and maybe there's a free pass there. Only 4 walks total.
Yeah.
That is, so only 8 batters made it to first base. That just can't happen.
Yeah.
You know, looking at it, especially with the strikeout numbers, you know, looking, Bub Terrell, you said, did not get a hit, 3 strikeouts, left a man on base. Mm-hmm. Brandon McCrane, 3 strikeouts, left a man on base. A total of 6 runners left on base for the Tigers out of their 8 that made it there.
Not going to get it done, Tripp.
No.
Not going to get it done. And it comes back to, what is the approach at the plate, right? And is that approach changing during the course of a game? I'm not seeing it right now.
I'm not seeing it either.
And that's frustrating. And that comes back to a particular, you know, entity here. But this is the only bugaboo that Auburn has on the whole baseball team, is the ability or the tendency to go ice cold with the bats. And thankfully, right, in this 6-game SEC winning series or SEC series winning streak, you haven't had it over an entire weekend. You had it in Tuscaloosa. You had it in you've had it in individual games like last night. But man, you got to find a way to turn it on, because when you hold the conference's best offensive team to 2 runs, where they beat you on only 2 swings. That's it. 2 swings beat you in this game. That's a bad sign for Auburn. And again, thankfully, we haven't seen it enough strung together game by game by game to have a major concern yet for what a regional could look like, or a super regional, or even Omaha if you get there, right? But these types of games, they just can't happen more than they're happening right now.
Right. You look at it, I mean, we have to, let's call a spade a spade. This is the first back-to-back loss for Auburn since the end of March.
Yeah.
When losing to Alabama in the sweep, and then going on the road to Rush Chandler in Atlanta and losing to Georgia Tech. Ever since then, if they lose, they immediately bounce back. Looking at loss to Jacksonville State, beat Kentucky 12-5 the next week, or that weekend. Then they lost game two against Kentucky, 11-0. Lost to Florida 3-6, won the next game 5-3. If lost to Oklahoma in the game two, won 14-4. You look at, you know, some of these, they like just they are able to change game to game, but that conversation needs to be happening during games,
mm-hmm.
because you can't just get lucky in a rubber match every single week, because eventually one's not going to go your way, and it might be the one in a regional or a super regional.
Yeah, and with this series, right, again, talking Auburn baseball, losing to Georgia last night by a score of 2-1 in the opener at Plainsman Park, game two tonight, 7 o'clock there at the ballpark. This is a series that we had talked about yesterday, and even with Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network, where, and Jack Hutton as well, where you could get swept in this series, and you're probably okay for a top 8 national seed. There's not a single Auburn fan that wants that to be the case in terms of getting swept by Georgia and going into postseason play on a negative ride, if you will.
And then heading to Hoover, where you've traditionally the past couple of years not played up to your potential.
Point. Yeah, it's a good point.
You could play your way out of a super regional and a national mm-hmm. seed, or you're on that cut line where – yeah, it would be great to be the number 5 and match up with the number 12, but you might slip down to that 8-9 game or the 7-10, you know, super regional, assuming you get there.
Mm-hmm. Auburn's been playing their best baseball. You just don't want that to go away right here at the end. And Georgia's, again, a very good baseball team.
Georgia's the best hitting team in the country.
Yeah. They didn't look like it last night. Auburn did their job on the mound, but yet again, the Bats let down Jake Marciano and Jackson Sanders. And so now you turn to Andreas Alvarez, who gets the start tonight. Petrovic will go tomorrow. We'll talk a little bit more about what game two tonight will look like, plus other results around the SEC in the final weekend of the regular season. Maybe an update from the PGA Championship as well. Got it on here in the studio. We'll tell you all about that and more as we are just underway here on the Friday edition of On the Line.
From revolution to rockets, from dusty frontiers to city skylines, these are the moments that shaped America. This is the American Minute, presented by Bucks Island. September 1814. The War of 1812 raged. British warships bombarded Fort McHenry through the night. Explosions lit the sky over Baltimore Harbor. Watching nearby was a young lawyer named Francis Scott Key. All night long, rockets burst overhead. When the morning arrived, Key searched through the smoke. Still flying above the fort, the American flag. Inspired by what he saw, Key began writing a poem that would become America's national anthem. One more moment that shaped the country we call home. This American Minute is presented by Bucks Island, family-owned and operated, serving boaters since 1948, online at bucksisland.com.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We are back here on the Friday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, the free-for-all Friday edition of On the Line. Jacob Goins in the studio with you. Trip Upton in here as well. Christian Griffin will be joining in hour number two. Him and I going to swap places for the afternoon. I'm here hour one. He's here hour two. Monday, we'll be in here in the studio. We'll be coming back from the Aces for Austin Golf Tournament, but we will be here. And then next week is kind of up in the air. We'll be here as many days as we can, but I may or may not have baseball at the end of next week out of town. I am going on a cruise the following week, so very excited for that. I got to make it to the dang thing
first. We got to get it. It starts tonight.
Yeah.
The path to the cruise starts tonight.
The path to the cruise starts tonight. It
really does. Because then, it's the emotional hedging for you.
Dude, yeah. If you know, you know, which nobody listening does, and that's okay. We'll keep it to ourselves.
Maybe Christian's listening while he's doing stuff around town and getting ready.
Maybe. Who knows? You never know with him. But we're talking more Auburn baseball. Again, Tigers losing last night to Georgia in game one by a score of 2-1. Trying to bounce back tonight. They'll have Andreas Alvarez on the mound to do it. Just that, and you feel good with Alvarez on the mound, and if you get any resemblance of what Jake Marciano did last night and then what the bullpen did with Jackson Sanders, if you get anything like that tonight, you're going to be in a good spot to win this game. I have a wild feeling, though, Tripp, and it's not that wild if you really think about it. You ain't holding Georgia to two runs again.
No.
And that's not a knock on Andreas Alvarez. You can't keep this Georgia team down for very long. They can score.
Yeah, I think that looking at it, you're going to have conversations inside the Auburn clubhouse about how they need to improve getting runs for tonight. Those same conversations are happening in the visitors' locker room. Mm-hmm. They're not saying, man, we beat Auburn. Like 2-1, sure, like they'll take it, but we need to start swinging because that's probably the bigger issue because that's going to help them the rest of the series. This team is just one that will swing for the fences no matter what. And that they just, Jack and I were talking last night that that's what their program is founded on, where the kids they look for in the high school ranks and especially in the transfer portal, they just find probably whoever has the best slugging percentage and home run numbers at the mid-major level and grab them, because that's just what it seems to be for Georgia, that they just have some guy that was at another school last year that just swings the stick and pops out with 20 home runs.
Yeah.
And just they continue to roll and be that program for the Dogs. And I think that you can't bank on, we'll hold them again to two or less tonight. It's probably going to look more in the 6-9 range.
Nice.
That was unintentional. But I was trying to avoid the 6-7 range. So the higher scoring single-digit range for runs tonight if Auburn wants to compete with Georgia, because that's just what it is. Again, not a knock on Andreas Alvarez, but those bats are scary.
And that was the conversation last night was, okay, Auburn scores first. Awesome. Then it was 0-0. And it was like, man, I'm not a fortune teller by any means.
We know.
But I can thank you. I can tell you Auburn ain't winning this game 1-0. It's just not going to happen.
No.
And even at that point, and when Georgia hit back, they hit a home run in the home run in the fifth and a home run in the sixth. It was like, okay, it was going to take more than one to win this game anyway. Now you got to do something. And they simply didn't. And now you have a chance to do that again tonight. Georgia's going to come out swinging again. Auburn has to find a way to get the bats moving.
Right, because you look at around the SEC last night, Auburn was tied for the second lowest score of any SEC team, and that was South Carolina that was lost 9-1 to Vanderbilt. Georgia was the second lowest scoring team in the SEC last night. Looking across the league, Kentucky downing Arkansas 4-3.
Mm-hmm.
State bullies A&M with a 10 spot in one inning. They win that one 18-11.
It's a crazy game.
Alabama comes back to beat Ole Miss. Florida outlasts LSU 11-8. Texas beats Missouri. They were tied going into the fourth.
Yeah.
They outlast them 6-3, and Tennessee steals one in Norman 9-7. And, you know, it is actually important. Normally, you don't want to try and focus on what's going on outside of Auburn when it comes to, like, focusing on what is going to happen, because Auburn still controls their own destiny for a lot of this stuff. But the double bye, having Mississippi State win that one's big. You would have liked Ole Miss to hold on against Alabama, but they've got two more games to do that.
Yeah, they were up 3-2 was Ole Miss at one point, to where I think Ole Miss was up 3-2 at one point in that when Alabama comes back to win it. So that one hurt you, but you said it, man. Mississippi State and Texas A&M. I don't know what was in the air over in College Station. Auburn needed a little bit of it. 18-11, and you mentioned using a 10 spot. Did Mississippi State? That's a bad Big Ten football score right there. 18-11. I mean, that's like Iowa Rutgers.
Please, hey, don't tempt me with a good time. That's gonna be. We gotta get to fall.
Yeah, you're right. Well, again, looking ahead to what happens tonight, Arkansas and Kentucky, all the same series. Reminder, these are all Thursday, Friday, Saturday series. Everybody getting ready for Hoover next week. And so Auburn tonight, 7 o'clock over on Wings 94.3, 6:45 broadcast time on the Auburn Sports Network here locally. Andy Burch and Brad Law will have the call. How about a little update from Pennsylvania with the PGA Championship trip?
I was watching that at lunch.
You see my boy Scotty, man. He's just lingering around there.
Dude, that's the ultimate Scotty Scheffler is just, he's not on the leaderboard day one, and you're like, is this the fall off? Is this the tournament? And then by the end of Saturday, you're like, oh, he's in the top five.
Yep, he's hanging around.
You see Goddard shoot, I think it was, he shot out the like 65 today.
He did shoot a 65 today.
They were
today.
Interviewing him when I was watching it. For lunch today, let's see, you know, Bryson DeChambeau still just looking terrible.
Yeah,
I love to see it.
Shocker. Yeah, Scottie Scheffler, 2-under on the tournament, went 1-over today, shot a 1-over 71, yet he's still only 3 shots back.
Yeah, I mean, the leader, Pottinger,
mm-hmm.
That'll be the
or
South.
Pottgeiter, I think is how Pottgeiter, you say it.
Yeah, Hideki's up there, Chris Goddard, yeah.
How about Jason Day in third, shots back?
Guess who's top 10? JT.
Sahith Thegala is in there. Good to see him playing well. Minwoo Lee up there. Cam Young. Justin Thomas. Scotty Scheffler.
Brooksy in the conversation now. He's 2-under on the day. He's tied for 9th with Scotty and JT.
Hey, there's Christian's guy, Ricky Fowler. He's tied.
There we go.
I
remember a certain someone last night at baseball saying that JT and Ricky weren't going to compete or win anytime soon.
That wasn't me.
Yes, it was.
No, it was not.
Yes, it was.
When did I?
Last night.
I said Jordan Spieth would never.
Okay,
he would
maybe
never
it was
win
Jordan
this.
Spieth.
Yeah, Jordan Spieth will never win this tournament.
Hey, which
is the one he needs to compete the career
he's
grand.
He's tied for 17th. He's 1-under.
Yep. Give it till tomorrow. He'll go 4-over tomorrow.
But he'll have the best shot you've ever seen.
He will. He'll have some stupid shot that he hits out of the woods, skipped over the pond, and hits off the flagstick, and he'll save double bogey. That's the Jordan Spieth way.
That's the experience right there, man.
Look, I love Jordan. He's lost it, man. He hasn't been good a decade. That's all I'm saying.
You're just crushing. You like stepping on dandelions and punting kittens.
I don't step on dandelions anymore. Not after my girl Ella released the album. Come on, Trip.
Sorry.
Come on, man. Got to be better. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. Auburn basketball's got some news. A new roster addition we got to tell you about.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes in to the free-for-all Friday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins. Trip Upton in the studio as well. Christian will be here in the next 30 minutes or so. He'll have you with Trip for hour number two. Phone lines are open. Reminder on this free-for-all Friday, 334-321-1390. Talk to Auburn baseball the first 30 minutes. Want to talk Auburn basketball here for just a little bit because some news reported as of this morning, Auburn basketball makes what I believe will be its final addition to the upcoming roster as Stephen Pearl goes overseas again to get another addition to the team. This time, a 6'6" guard, all right, from overseas, from Lithuania. Trip, your pronunciation of this? Please?
Okay. Let me...
I was kidding. I can try. I think I have it. Okay. Montas. Hold on. Let me pull it back up. I have him pulled up, but I need... Oh, I lost it. Where'd it go?
Rubstavicius? Yes.
Rubstavicius. I think that's right.
Yes.
Rubstaviches. I think so. I think that's right. Montas Rubstaviches. I believe, according to the online Lithuanian pronunciation guide, okay, Montas Rubstaviches, I believe is what this is, okay? Anyway, the dude can play. The dude is solid. 6'6", is the guard. I've also seen people write that he's 6'8".
That's what the link that you have on the rundown says. From
but then 247 says he's 6'6". So
should we just?
I guess we have to say he's 6'7". I guess so. 6'7", 6'8", 6'6". He's over. He's really tall. Okay, yeah. He is a shooting guard played in the Lithuanian leagues over there. Played on the wing. A guy whose numbers are solid, okay? A guy who has been around the block a couple of times, and he's only 24 years old. It's fine. I mean, he's only older than, you know, everybody else on the team. He's older than you.
Yeah. He's older than Tripp, or 2 years older than me.
Older than Tripp.
2 years younger than you.
Yeah, I know. God, could you imagine? And so this has caused a little bit of controversy in the college basketball world, which we'll get to in just a moment.
Auburn in controversy? No.
Yeah, I know. Shocker, right? This is a guy who has been playing professional basketball since 2018. He's been playing pro ball for 8 years now, in a mixture of Lithuania, Australia. He also played a little bit in the NBA G League, okay, and some of their preseason camps and things. The guy has a draft scout. He has an NBA scout-like write-up, okay? He has a whole preview of what the folks in the NBA were getting themselves into. He is a shooter. He is a scorer. He is able to handle the basketball particularly well. He is also able to play a little bit bigger than a guard too. I think you could put him at the three if you really wanted to go that route as well. And so I really do think that this is an interesting ad for Auburn basketball. Their second international player on top of Francis Ngoy from France. Mm-hmm. And Auburn continues, Trip, to add scoring, yes, but they continue to go with size on this team, too.
Yeah, I think it's a big course correction from last year where you kind of really ran. You didn't have a ton of size, and that showed for games like the Tennessee game where it just looked like they were getting dominated on the boards. The Alabama game in specific. And speaking of Alabama, when you said, oh, he's got professional experience, played in the G League scout, I went to Twitter, or X, to look and see what the Bama people were saying, and the account that I thought would have tweeted about it already, it was the first tweet in my feed. So, tells you what they think about that, because again, it's a guy that's done professionally, and
oh, we'll get there in a minute. Believe me, I have thoughts.
You have thoughts, and I'm sure I probably have similar thoughts. But I think that it's a big add, especially when you add the size there, being a guy that could be a starting three, maybe a guy off the bench. For Stephen Pearl and this Auburn Tiger team, and just continues to expand the international game with what Auburn tries to recruit to.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there's been a ton over the past 4 to 5 years, and that now continues under Stephen Pearl's recruiting.
Christian is apparently listening as he's wrapping up his errands and on his way back to the studio. He says MR for short. He's just going to be MR, or he'll be called the Praying Mantis.
The Praying Mantas?
The Praying Mantas. The Praying Mantas.
I like that.
That'd be pretty awesome. That is,
I'll put it on a t-shirt or something.
Yeah, Christian has, he has trademarked that and claimed that. But you look at what Auburn basketball now has. Again, the addition today of a Lithuanian guard. He is 6'6", 6'7", 6'8", somewhere in there. He is just a bit under 200 pounds and a Lithuanian guard who is the age of 24. Rubstaviches will now be joining a guard room for Auburn basketball, right, with KO, Tahad Pettiford, Simon Walker coming back, and also George Kimball coming in from Vanderbilt. I have a weird feeling, though, that Rubstaviches is not going to be a traditional guard. I see him being your backup three, if you will. I see him being, he's a good shooter, right? He's a guy who, what did Ricky just do?
Double bogey.
I laugh. I really like Ricky Fowler. I just know Christian really, really likes Ricky Fowler.
Yeah.
That is pure Ricky right there, buddy. Be in contention and blow up. Oh, there's Scotty back on the leaderboard. Anyway, I think Rubes Davicius is somebody that Auburn is excited about. He clearly has experience, okay? You don't have to worry about that. College experience, no. But again, playing in Lithuanian leagues, playing in Australian leagues, and in some form of the NBA G League, you can't overlook what experience and overseas basketball that he's bringing. But I don't know how much you rely on him. I don't know how many minutes he's going to get, but at least he's got the size, he's got the athleticism, and he's a 45-50% three-point shooter in his career, I guess you'll call it. He's somebody that Auburn can use in a pure scoring and maybe even a defensive spot as well.
Yeah, that definitely with the scoring part of it, he could be a factor there, helping out again with that second unit or that starting lineup if they have a lot of guard pressure on the guys like Tahad Pettiford, mm-hmm. Kevin Overton, Kimball.
I don't think this guy's a starter.
No, I think this guy is he's your go-to bench forward. And I think he could definitely make some day one impact for sure, and kind of tell the guys like, hey, this is how we do it in the Euro leagues. This is what kind of be a leader in this mm-hmm. locker room.
And that's one thing too, is these guys get to bring their different brand and different style of basketball to the college game. I am not a huge fan. Okay. And this has been happening for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years now that this has really started to grow and become a big trend in college basketball. And look, while it's allowed and while it's legal, I think coaches should take advantage of it, okay? Because you are already having to recruit against the top of the top for high school kids, right? The Kansas and Kentuckys and Dukes of the world. Then you're having to compete with those turkeys in the transfer portal. So rather than doing that or just losing out and saying, well, guess we're SOL, coaches started realizing, hey, why don't we go overseas? Why don't we go get this 19-year-old kid that's been playing in Serbia? Why don't we go get this 24-year-old man that's been playing in Lithuania and Australia in the NBA G League? Nobody else is going to get him. We'll bring him over here, and he can bring his overseas experience, and we'll teach him our college game. We'll teach him our sets, and he is a disciplined shooter, as this guy in particular, but just in general, or maybe just because someone's 7'2" like Francis Ngoy.
Yeah, first of all, Christian, as long as this European can actually shoot free throws, then we're good.
Ooh.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, Filip Jović was not the best free throw shooter.
No.
He's 50%.
No, but
he was going to brick one and swish one.
Yes.
You just didn't know which one it was going to be.
Right. And so, but my question to you, Jacob, because I know you said you had thoughts on this, but I'm, you know, just bring it out in the open and be the ask the necessary question. What's other than, you know, like, what's the difference between bringing in a 24-year-old who's done G League stuff, who's done stuff overseas professionally for almost a decade? What's different than that in Charles Bediako? If people are asking the question, what are your thoughts on that?
In terms of what?
Like, you know, Alabama fans are like, well, he's a professional. He's 24 years old. He's done G League camps.
Yeah. Well, I think the difference is, and I don't like either situation. I want to make that clear. I think coaches should take advantage of it while it's still allowed. I don't love the idea of a 24-year-old semi-professional basketball player joining the college game. I don't like that. I think college athletics have become so broken, and it's weird that basketball is the one that's really going down this path more than any other sport, as far as we know, where you have basketball players from Argentina or wherever that are 22, 23 that have never even thought about attending school and playing college basketball in the States. And now they have the chance to do so. And you've got some of these guys who were joining as quote-unquote freshmen because they never joined the college game. They never enrolled in a university, right? That's the difference with what this is versus Charles Bediako, who was in college, who had his decision and opted to get rid of his college eligibility, to forego his college eligibility and say, I'm going to take my chance in the NBA draft. And clearly, he was wrong because nobody wanted him in the NBA. And so he tried to come back, and Alabama was the only team that would take him. But that's how it's always been, right? You waive your right to your eligibility to go and test the NBA draft waters. With this guy, right, again, the one Auburn picked up today, Montas, the praying Montas, if you will, 6'7" guard from Lithuania, who has played 8 years of semi-professional basketball between Lithuania, Australia, and the NBA G League. At least he's never been in college before. At least he didn't give up that right and say, I'm going to play 2 years of college ball. I'm going to go to the NBA. And it's like, oh, they didn't really want me. So I want to come back. I'm just kidding. I didn't really actually want to do that, right? Again, I don't love this. I don't. But while it's open, sure, you may as well take advantage.
Fair. But just had to ask for, you know, journalism.
Journalism,
yeah. But no, I mean, looking at his statistics, you know, this is per a in 2024-25 in his last semi-professional year in the Euro Cup, averaged about 12 points per game with, I'm not even going to try and pronounce that team name. About 12 points a game, had an assist here, a rebound here, a steal here, but it was mostly just about being a scorer. That's what he's here to do. And I think that, yes, I do, while it is open and the opportunity is there, I think it'd be foolish not to, but at the same time, it is, you know, it's a look where, like, is Auburn going to be holier than thou over at Alabama to do this? Probably not, no. I mean, nothing Auburn has ever done has showed that, but just being the comparison, that's just people, that's why it's gotten a lot of controversy. And while I understand that, I think I agree with you that, like, yeah, while you can do it, but he's not been in college. It's the collegiate eligibility already been exhausted in a Charles Bediako or other situations where that's possible.
And, you know, I understand where people are coming from too on the idea of, well, why should we? Because my thing would be like, yeah, put some sort of a ruling in there, put some of a restriction in there, right? Whatever the case may be. And there would be a lot of people who would say, well, who are you to tell this young man or this, you know, almost like fully grown man, I guess, 24 years old, but just any player in particular. Filip Jovic was another example. It's like, who are you to say that he shouldn't be able to play college basketball? Like, why are you withholding him and trying to keep him out, right, of attending college in America and playing basketball? Because those are cool opportunities, and I totally understand that, but I don't know, man. There's got to be a line somewhere.
Well, I think with the 5-5, like, that's going to help out where it's either the high school graduation or their 19th birthday. If that applies to these players not in the United States education system and are overseas,
I assume it would, right?
It would. So it'd be that 19th birthday. Technically, that means that he wouldn't be able to play, but because 19 plus 5, I know our math skills are bad here. That's 24.
Yep.
That's how old he is right now, but I think that maybe the idea is if he's going to be a 24-year-old freshman, then, you know, if he's going to be playing till 28, I just don't see why. But, hey, if he comes in and is the second coming of, you know, is the greatest European player ever, I don't mind that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll have to see. But Auburn, again, gets a commitment today. Montas has joined the Auburn basketball team. Again, a 6'7" guard. Between 6'6 and 6'8, depending on where you look. May just depend on what shoes and how spiked up his hair is that day. He's a shooter. He can score. He can dribble. He is definitely a catch-and-shoot guy. Can he create off the bounce? Yeah, a little bit, but he's got some size to defend. He's got some athleticism as well. Coming over from Lithuania, he'll be joining the Auburn basketball team in that guard room. I think maybe a forward as well. Auburn makes its most likely last addition to the upcoming 26 and 27 roster. We will take a break. We'll come back and wrap up hour number one. Tell you a little bit of high school stuff going on as well. And then Christian and I will swap places here in the studio. All that coming up here on the Friday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrap it up. Hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Got a couple of minutes before Christian will join us in the studio. He's been out for the first hour. He'll be here in the second hour. I will not be. I am heading out and heading over to SEMO Field. Excited, man. Auburn High baseball tonight against Central Phoenix City. Tigers and Red Devils. Second series of the year. Auburn beat Central in the first series in area play, 2-1. And we've told you all season how high school baseball is set up so funky, right? Where you play three teams in best of three series, but the first two are the only ones that count unless a tiebreaker is needed. Well, Auburn and Central played that third game. Auburn won that third game, and the tiebreaker has come back to benefit the Tigers. That's why Auburn gets to host this semifinal match, Final Four, Auburn and Central. Winner goes on to the state championship series next weekend, where the winner of this series will get the winner of Thompson and Hewitt Trustville. So a pretty big series going on up there this weekend as well. I'll have the call for you tonight for Auburn and Central one more time this season. Tigers and Red Devils on 96.3 W Lee, 96.3 WLEE.com. And the Radio Alabama app. So first pitch of game one, 5 o'clock. So if you're getting off early, sit out back and put it on the radio, put it on a speaker, sit on the deck, have yourself an evening, and listen to a couple of great high school baseball games. I'll have game one for you at 5, game two scheduled for around 7:30. So I'll have that for you on 96.3 W Lee. And man, it's going to be a ton of fun. It doesn't get any bigger than Auburn and Central. Tigers coming off of a short week, short rest after beating Enterprise Monday night, Tuesday night in that best of three series in the quarterfinals. Now they get the Red Devils in the semifinals, and again, winner moves on to state. So very excited for it. Should have a big turnout at SEMO Field. If you're not busy tonight, pull up on the left field hill, man, tailgate, bring some burgers, bring some dogs, bring some non-alcoholic beverages since we're on the campus of a high school.
Oh yeah, I might have to stop by there tonight.
Yeah, Tripp, you'll be with me for a little bit in the booth, so looking forward to that. And yeah, we're excited for it. Again, 5 o'clock first pitch, game one of Auburn and Central in the Final Four. Winner moves on to the state championship game. We'll have that for you tonight, 5 o'clock on 96.3 W Lee. So I'm about to head out, and yeah, as Christian says, also the final meeting in 7A, because 6A will be this next year. 7A, we'll go back to 2014 times. That's when the last 6A championship in this category was played. So 2015 is when 7A was brought back. And so, yeah, we'll have that for you tonight. And Christian and Tripp have our number two on the show coming up. What do you guys have to discuss?
Yeah, we'll be really deep diving into, again, previewing, kind of getting his thoughts on the game tonight, the game last night. That'll be really fun to hear his perspective. And then we are going to be talking a lot about year one head coaches. Who has the most pressure to win year one? And you know, this is a graphic by CBS, and they actually are pretty favorable to Alex Golish and the Auburn Tigers. So what does that mean? Tune in to hour number two and find out.
Yeah, that's right. Stick around. As I say, don't you dare turn that radio dial until 4:45, when then you can join me on 96.3 W Lee. Download that Radio Alabama app as well. Tigers and Red Devils, Final Four, the 7A baseball state finals. We'll have it for you, 96.3 W Lee. Hour number one, though, in the books for today's show. Stick around. Christian and Tripp got you for hour number two.
Are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what Sports Talk Radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7 Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Friday, everybody. Hope you're doing well. And man, feels like it's been a long week. We are very, very happy that it's Friday, but hope you're doing well here as we get underway in hour number two on the free-for-all Friday revolving door edition of On the Line. Jacob Goins steps out. I take his spot. But we're going to have a fantastic hour number two. Trip Upton still here with us, our good buddy Trip. And I'm Christian Griffin here, taking you the rest of the way here on this free-for-all Friday edition of On the Line. If you missed any of hour number one, man, I can tell you how great it was. It was such a good one that I got to listen to, but unfortunately was not in the studio for. Trip, I know you got to dive into, again, obviously a very frustrating game one of Auburn and Georgia. We'll dive into a little bit more of that, more so in terms of what this means for the remainder of the weekend, but dove into the fact that you only gave up two runs against the best hitting team in the SEC, and you lost. You put up one run in the first two batters, and then were blanked ever since then. Also, more game reactions from the rest of the Southeastern Conference. A couple of big-time upsets outside the SEC as well as I saw that UCLA went down. Washington picked up a big-time win. And funny enough, Jacob made fun of the Huskies on the baseball diamond. And so maybe UCLA is just frauds. Maybe they're just bad at baseball. Maybe that's the route that we need to take. Just kidding on this side of things. But a lot of SEC breakdowns. Also, a conversation that we started yesterday but weren't able to really dive into. But the athletic department donations in the 2024-2025 fiscal season. And where does Auburn rank in terms of that? And would we imagine that they would increase or what they would decrease over the most recent year, again, as they continue to figure out those numbers? But again, a couple of years ago, where did Auburn rank in terms of the athletic department donations for the 2024-2025 calendar season? Also, some high school updates as well. We'll get you those throughout our hour in there as well. But if you missed any of it, again, you can check it out in the podcast center on ESPNAU.com.
And in hour number two, we're going to be previewing the game tonight, Tigers and Dogs game two. For this one, Andres Alvarez on the mound. I'm excited to be able to talk about that one. We're also going to talk about the newest CBS Sports Patience Meter that Christian sent me this morning. We're going to dive deep into that and kind of see where we stand on that. And surprisingly enough, Auburn, not at a five. Everyone tells me and everyone says, you know, Auburn fans have the most unrealistic expectations of all time. If you don't have nine wins in year one, you're going to get fired at Auburn. CBS Sports disagrees, and they're right. I mean, that's not true.
Yeah, no, should be really fun. But there are a couple SEC teams and a couple of year one head coaches that are not necessarily in the patience meter. And again, we'll dive into that here as we go along. But again, we appreciate everybody for being here with us. He's Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Jacob Goins hitting the road right now, not having to go too far, but wanting to give himself plenty of time to finish up his prep, get set up for Auburn High and Central, the Final Four on the baseball diamond, SEMO Field. We'll tell you a little bit more about that again as the show goes along. But 96.3 W Lee is where you need to spend your evening. 96.3 and 94.3 between the two of them. Anytime one goes to commercial break, you just flip over to the next one. But appreciate everybody for being here with us. And again, they're a little bit of the revolving door over the past what feels like couple of weeks as playoffs are going down the home stretch. And unfortunately, things are a little bit easier now that mine are no longer going on, but
yeah.
We'll continue to hope that it's a little chaotic for the next week or so with Auburn High School. But for everybody sticking with us, again, I know that's a little bit chaotic, maybe not on your end. You're just listening to the radio station.
Man, I'm just here so I don't get fined.
Yeah, I mean,
I just work.
Wait,
here.
You guys are getting paid?
Seriously.
All right. CBS College Football released a post a couple of days ago, and it talks about college football's first-year head coaches and their patience meters in terms of the national media, in terms of the fan base, and just because of the overall job that that coach is taking over. Now, this could be first-year head coaches. I don't believe there's any true first-year head coaches on here. It's more so just the big time. Oh, there might be a couple of them on here.
I mean, Utah's Morgan Scalzi.
Right.
That's a coordinator hire. Colin Klein at Kansas State. Tosh Leopi at Cal.
Okay, so there are a couple of year ones.
Some of the smaller names, not the bigger names, I guess you could say.
That is so weird seeing these, though, because even those types of names, like the Tosh Leopi or Colin Klein, they don't feel like first year head coaches because you've heard their name in so many different carousels for so long that it just feels like they've been around the block for 10 years with the head coaching headset on. But again, we'll get with Auburn here in just a little bit, but did want to dive into, again, these patience meters and kind of the schedule for each of these teams as well. And what better way to start off the graphic than with Lane Kiffin at LSU?
The Lane train, baby.
The Lane train. And I don't think it's too dramatic to say that for LSU and the amount of money that they've spent, not only on the head coach, but on the players, on everything, safe to say, again, this is based off of a 1 through 5 scale, or I guess a 5 through 1. 5 being you must win now. 1 being they call it the understandable multi-year rebuild. I don't think it's too dramatic to say that LSU is not expecting a rebuild. They are in win big, win it right now. And I think that Brian Kelly has amped that fire a little bit. And now Lane Kiffin walking his way in the door with an unwritten, unblank check. You feel like it makes it to where, I mean, Lane Kiffin and LSU better get it done right now.
Yeah, I mean, looking ahead at this schedule, it definitely has its ups and downs. You start out at home against a Clemson Tiger team that's lost a lot, but it was a team that underperformed last year. So I feel like my, you know, Clemson knowledge is they might course correct this year and get back to closer to the top of the ACC. But again, I have to dive into the numbers there. And, you'd say the ACC, Jacob, well, you know, you could just show up and win that conference. I'm sure he'd love that comment. But, again, Louisiana Tech.
I don't know that I disagree. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, just kidding. Louisiana Tech and McNeese as well in the non-conference. Those should be two easy in-state wins. But then the big one, Saturday, September 19th, the Tigers head to Oxford. Lane Kiffin, welcome home.
And that is a already confirmed. That is the 6:30 game that you would imagine will be the ABC type of game, yes. If not the
game day will be in Oxford, Mississippi that
it
day.
Already is. It is already is okay. Confirmed to be the ABC game, which I don't think that surprises anybody. That's everybody's expecting that, as you mentioned, to be college game day. That is one of the most anticipated games of the entire season, especially if LSU is able to beat Clemson. Making it to where, okay, Lane Kiffin's already got one big win. Now they go on the road for the first time to their former home at a place he knows better than anybody.
Yeah, especially, yeah. It'll be interesting to see that one as well at Oxford. Then they come home against Texas A&M. They have that McNeese game in between a trip to Lexington, Kentucky. That could be a sneaky one. I know you guys are so high on this Kentucky Wildcat team and Will Stein, who another first-year head coach that we're going to have to get to.
Mm-hmm.
Mississippi State at home, heading to Jordan-Hare. Then they return for the rivalry game against Alabama and Baton Rouge. And then they play Texas, Tennessee, at Tennessee, and then in Fayetteville to end the year. That's a manageable schedule.
I haven't dove into this LSU schedule. It's very, very manageable.
I mean, Texas is going to be a tough one, but it's in Baton Rouge. Alabama's a tough one. It's in Baton Rouge. I mean, I'm looking at it in Texas A&M, tough one. It's in Baton Rouge. I think you have your three hardest home games in that middle stretch.
Your home games for LSU are insane.
Oh, if you're a student, I'm sure they're getting fired up there.
I mean, Clemson, Louisiana Tech, Texas A&M, McNeese, Mississippi State, Alabama, Texas. That's a really good home slate.
Right, and if they can just, par out the going on the road, if they, maybe, let's say they drop the one in Ole Miss in an emotion-filled game, if they can just, Kentucky, Auburn, Knoxville, Fayetteville, if you go better than 2-2 there, even with the Ole Miss loss, maybe you're talking about a college football playoff appearance.
I mean, that's That's the expectation in year one. Again, diving into the first year coach's patience meter, according to CBS Sports' Brad Crawford, the big graphic released on their social media pages. And funny enough that we start with LSU and talk about a first year head coach. You look up and down the schedule, Ole Miss, first year head coach. You continue on, Auburn, first-year head coach. Arkansas, first-year head coach. Kentucky, first-year head coach. This entire schedule is always full of first-year head coaches, but I think it's safe to say, leading off the graphic, and rightfully so, is Lane Kiffin with a win big now. Not really room in Baton Rouge for a calm little rebuild of, yeah, you can get 8 wins, you can get 9. If you just miss the playoffs, it's fine. No, it's the fact if we gave you a blank check to go win football games and to compete for a trophy.
Yeah, especially the roster they brought in. Having Sam Leavitt, who, you know, he's going to be without Jordan Tyson. Is that going to be kind of seeing what his medal is in that Lane Kiffin system? I mean, any quarterback can succeed in his system with him and Tommy Reese there in Baton Rouge. Also, Malik Blockton going to be a big piece of that defensive line for the Tigers in Baton Rouge.
Yeah.
That, which is, you know, you know, that'll be an interesting. So if they can, again, it's, and they kept, I believe they kept the defensive coordinator that was really good for them last year. So that's, I mean, LSU, if they are not, you, I think worst case scenario, you're the first team out of the SEC.
Yeah. I mean,
but they expect playoffs or, hey man, what else is it going to take? We gave you our entire state GDP.
Literally. I think, well, it was LSU at the top. They were 8.5 wins, I believe, of their total. And Georgia and Texas were both 9.5 for their projected win totals. But, man, even 9-3, you would look at it to be pretty frustrating in terms of LSU. We continue on with the first-year coach's patience meter and staying in the number 5 category, which is like the extreme category of you must win right now. Not going to spend too much time on this because it doesn't reflect the Southeastern Conference as much, but more so just a reminder, Kyle Whittingham is the man in the big house.
Yes.
And he, I believe, is in that same category of win big right now. And my goodness, you look at their schedule, and it's one of the more difficult ones that Michigan has had over the past while, because sometimes it's, okay, you have Oregon or Ohio State, or you have Penn State and Oregon, but you don't have, or you have Oregon and Ohio State, but you don't have whoever the case may be. And now you're sitting there. You have Penn State, you have Indiana, you have Oregon, and you have Ohio State. That's a tough schedule that you're going to have to face down the stretch. That being said, I'm not going to act like the other parts are too unforgiving. When you sit there and look at Western Michigan, UTEP, Iowa, Minnesota, Rutgers, Michigan State, and UCLA, those should all be wins. But then again, you have Indiana at home, you have Penn State at home in back-to-back weeks. That's a big stretch. Then you go to Eugene after the middle of the game with the Michigan State, and then you have Ohio State and Columbus. And then week two, you are at home. The return trip with John Mateer in Oklahoma. That's 5 really, really big opponents. Kyle Whittingham, I think, falls in that category, and CBS College Football agrees of a win now.
I'm going to disagree. I think that you look at how the Sharon Moore era ended and the underperforming, not only on the field. I think, you know, off the field stuff is just, yeah, that's obviously the big reason why he was let go there. But the on the field, like, there was never an offense for a guy that's an offensive coordinator. You think, you know, being one thing that I've just, this is one of my like go-to college football takes, is that if you're an offensive head coach, if your offense isn't good, you're part of the problem.
Yeah.
If you are a team where you have to win defensive battles and you can't score more than a touchdown against Kentucky, but you're an offensive mastermind, it's probably your part of the problem. And
you're just speaking hypothetically, right?
Yeah, you know,
okay.
I mean, you know, no one would ever be that. but looking at it, and Sharon Moore, offensive coordinator for the Wolverines, taking over after Jim Harbaugh, the offense was always really, really bad. And I just don't think that he, you know, he left a lot. I mean, yes, he brought in Bryce Underwood. That was a lot more because of the recruiting in the NIL.
Sure.
But I think, honestly, looking at that schedule, you know, you highlighted, you know, yes, Oklahoma, yes, Penn State, yes, Ohio State, yes, Oregon, yes, Indiana. What's that? Let's say they go 500 in this game. Who says they're going to beat like a Michigan State who is going to have Pat Fitzgerald? he's on this list. He's rated at a one.
Yeah.
And I think he's going to exceed that expectation. I'm really high on Michigan State this year, just with the schedule and just the winning culture that he brings in. What if Iowa finally finds some offense and wins a rock fight? I think that Michigan, I'd say him, he's at four. Like, I think if it's 8-4, maybe but you beat someone you're not supposed to, then I think, okay, yeah, he is the guy. And Kyle Whittingham will build that defensive culture, sure, bring in an offensive guy, and help develop Bryce Underwood. But I think they're a year away from being a real contender. And I think that the people at Michigan, maybe their expectations might not know that, but I think he's more of a four.
I think that's, I guess, where I fall into the win now of it's the nameless, faceless, just Michigan job, right? I mean, that's kind of the big brand, the big logo. You're not going to go out and you're not going to go win games. Real quickly, James Franklin in that number four category of there's a little bit of win right now. I feel like that's a little bit high for James Franklin. Pete Agreed. Golding is at four. Morgan Scaly for Utah is at four. Colin Klein at three. You have Eric Morris at three. You have Bob Chesney at number two. And that's where we'll pause right there, because there's a couple other SEC teams that we want to talk about and dive into. And where does Auburn and Alex Golish fall into this category? We will continue to dive into the head coach first year coach's patience meter, according to CBS Sports, when we return here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We are back here on the Free For All Friday edition of On the Line. Hey, it's Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin, and we continue talking college football's first year head coaches and their patience meter, according to CBS Sports. And again, this is in terms of the schedule. This is in terms of what the fan base expects, what the talent on the roster looks like, and then just the overall expectation of where their program has been and where they're obviously trying to get it to go. And last segment, we dove into a lot of the win big nows, the Lane Kiffins of the world, the Kyle Whittinghams, the James Franklins, who, again, I still think is a little bit high at number four for Virginia Tech. I feel like James Franklin could be a number two, where it's like, you're not at the point of, okay, James, here's a six-year rebuild. But at the same time, when's the last time Hokies have really had true expectations when it comes to football?
I mean,
loving ACC.
I mean, well, I feel like they had it the past 2 years, because you have Drones there at quarterback. You had Brent Pry, who was kind of the up and coming coaching darling of the ACC. Everyone was like, man, just wait till Brent Pry gets in there. And I think that, honestly, that role has been taken by Brent Key at Georgia Tech, because they were two guys, the two Brents were compared a ton. But when you had Kylan Drones at quarterback there, it was, man, you know, this team just won the Military Bowl. They went a sneaky 7 or 8-5. Like, this is going to be the team in the ACC next year. I think I had them picked in the top half of the ACC the past 2 years. But I think that looking at it, it was just underperforming expectations. And having a guy like James Franklin, I think that they're going to give him a year to kind of – I know there's no true rebuilds now in college football.
Right.
But having – especially in the portal era, but having James Franklin there, I think that – I put him at like a three or a two, where it's year one, if we go 6-6, 7-5, our young guys show and prove it, the recruits that you brought in start to pile up.
Yeah.
Then it's – how can we take the ACC by storm the next year?
We mentioned Pete Golding, who sits at number four in terms of, again, not the extreme of win big now, but teetering that line. And this is such an interesting year one, because you saw what he was able to do in the bowl game, and you saw the expectations that are being put there, and you saw the players rally around him, obviously with Trinidad Chambliss staying in Oxford rather than going to Baton Rouge. And I think there was more to that Lane Kiffin decided on, okay, well, we can't wait for eligibility. I'm going to go get somebody that I need, and obviously got a really good one. But year one at Ole Miss, the schedule is relatively favorable for the Ole Miss Rebels. And you just look at a guy like Golding, and it's okay, you have big shoes to fill. How can you do so in year one? And so, I think I like where he is at, but one of the more interesting not only coaching hires, but coaching expectations of You've already coached in a college football playoff game before you've had your own regular season.
Yeah, I look at Pete Golding at Ole Miss, and I don't think he's made a lot of friends.
No.
In his first offseason. I mean, look at Sark's comments. Look at Dabo getting after him for, you know, getting a linebacker to do the silent portal that we talked about that's been finally banned, which, I mean, I think we were like one of the first people on that. Just putting it out there.
I think we should get royalty on it.
We really should.
Trademark. It's the on-the-line ghost portal.
Yes, the on-the-line ghost portal. But I look at Pete Golding, and yes, you have Trinidad potentially probably back. I know, again, there's a lot. But you have Deuce Knight there waiting in the wings. You bring in a big portal class. I think they're at a six. If you're going to put Lane Kiffin and LSU at a five, you need to put them at a six because everybody in Oxford and all of the boosters, all of the administrators, all the coaches, the record that matters, their record matters number one, LSU's record matters number two. And if you have more wins or you have less year wins than, you know, especially dramatically by two or three than LSU in year one under Pete Golding, that's going to be viewed as a colossal failure because you're trying to win the breakup now.
Yeah, when it comes to the we cannot get little brothered by Lane Kiffin. And LSU is already playing that big brother role, but Ole Miss is trying to work their way back up to, okay, although you took our guy, we're still perfectly fine. And I know Lane Kiffin had comments about it just a couple of days ago about, yeah, we might have won it all if I would have stayed to the college football playoff. And it was like, okay.
But how do you know that your off-the-field stuff wouldn't, you know?
Exactly.
Like, again, you bring so much prima donna stuff there, and I just think that
Golding got the guys to rally around him.
Right, exactly. I think that was the story. It was not, this is Lane Kiffin's team. This was Pete Golding and the boys banding together in spite of Lane.
Right, yeah. Continuing on, sticking in the SEC, again, have a few minutes, but do want to dive into Auburn, so won't spend as much time on this. John Summerall, kind of right in the middle at three.
Fair.
I think that is a very fair suggestion. Bob Chesney, again, we mentioned at number two. Will Stein at two. I think that is right where he needs to be as well. We talk about the expectations, and Jacob's a little bit higher on this team than I am in year one. I think when you get to year two and year three, I think that is where this Wildcats team is going to be really scary. Again, we've dove into the Kentucky schedule and how favorable it could be for Will Stein in year one, but the recruiting class being where he wants it to be, you get those guys on campus, and then I think you have a legit conversation. Ryan Silverfield at Arkansas, I think he's too high. He's a two. I put him at one.
I mean, first of all, let's call a spade a spade. He was not their 1A hire.
No.
It was the guy that's currently sitting in the position of Auburn head coach, Alex Golish. And I think Silverfield was the safe hire, I guess, because, you know, he comes from that background of being at Memphis, same recruiting area, just go into Tennessee, maybe steal a couple kids from North Alabama and just dominate the state of Arkansas. But I think looking at that Arkansas team, I just don't see how this team is in contention for, you know, a bowl game in year one under Ryan Silverfield. To me, sounds like the maybe hope. I got pulling up their schedule right now. I mean, you have North Alabama, you have Utah in the non-conference, another first-year head coach in Morgan Stanley, who was the head coach awaiting there. Then you have Georgia coming to Fayetteville in the SEC. You've got to travel to A&M. You got Tennessee. You got to travel to Vanderbilt. You got to travel to Auburn, Missouri, South Carolina, at Texas and LSU. A path to a bowl game is very hard unless you have something unforeseen up your sleeve, as Ryan Silverfield.
And then it brings us to Auburn and Alex Golish, who, funny enough, I think you hinted at it to start the hour on, if you didn't see a patience meter, the national media you feel like would give Auburn right around a 4 or 5 just based off of, you got to go in there and you got to win right now because this program is expecting it and the fan base expects it. And by no means am I saying that the Auburn fan base doesn't and Alex Golish doesn't expect to win. But according to CBS Sports and again, Brad Crawford, I think he's given Auburn a little bit of leniency. He has Auburn and Alex Golish right smack dab in the middle at number three of you're not leaning towards win big now. You're not necessarily leaning towards the understandable multi-year rebuild. I personally still think it's a little bit low. I don't know that I can go as far as four, and I know that this is getting a little nitpicky with the graphic, but I would put him right in the middle of 3 and 4. If you could put him at 3.5, I feel like that would be the perfect spot, because I don't think the expectations are, all right, coach, you brought in a lot of South Florida guys. You better go to the college football playoff. You better get it done. That being said, I still think and this is more of the Auburn than the Alex Golish side of things. We've seen so much over the past half decade and so much frustration and so much talent on the field that just hasn't produced the wins. And right. I think that's where the frustration comes in. Again, kind of like the Michigan of, it's just the brand that you expect to get wins. Alex Golish has the opportunity to exceed those as he sits right at number 3 in the college football first-year patience meter, according to CBS Sports.
Yeah, I think it's fair. I think that what they're basing a lot of that off is the talent lost. Your Cam Coleman's, your Perry Thompson's, right. Your Deuce Knights, your Malik Blocktons. And especially with the South Florida guys, I hope they do great. Byron Brown's obviously a phenomenal. They were able to win in Florida last year in the SEC. But, they didn't even win their conference championship. So it's not – I think it's – proof of concept this year. Byron Brown maybe gets them to, you're looking at around the 7-win mark, hopefully higher. And if recruiting picks up steam there, they're going to have an opportunity next fall to be in the 2027 season to be, hey, this team is due.
Got to find a way to get some wins. And a team that needs a win right now is Auburn baseball.
We're halfway through hour number 2. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
Halfway through hour number 2 here on the Free For All Friday edition of On the Line. And it's felt a little bit like that, not only because of the content, but because of, man, everybody working their way out of the studio. Jacob Goins on his way to SEMO Field. So he's out for hour number 2, but he is Tripp Upton. I'm Christian Griffin carrying you the rest of the way here this afternoon. Just had a really fun conversation and some disagreements, some agreements, and a really fun debate and conversation on the patience meter for college football's first year head coaches. Where does Auburn stand? Where did a couple other SEC teams? Alex Golish right in the middle. And we kind of agreed. We kind of didn't agree with some of these rankings. And we talked about Auburn needing to win. And now we move over to the baseball diamond because Butch Thompson's team really needs a win. I know that, Tripp, you were able to dive into a lot of game one last night with Jacob, and so not going to double up on that side of things more than just kind of a brief recap. But a fantastic night yet again on the mound. You had two lefties that went, and there was a little bit of debate when we were all at the game of – ooh, Jackson coming in. Do we like that? Do we like burning our left-handed arm in a spot where you're already losing in this contest? And it was, okay, no, we kind of want to save him for when we're winning, but it was kind of also the, okay, well, Georgia didn't see Marciano great. He gave up 2 78-mile-an-hour changeups that he wants back, but another fantastic outing. If you want 2 pitches back against Georgia, shows that you had a pretty dang good outing. Went 6 innings, 4 hits, 2 runs, 5 strikeouts, and then Jackson Sanders comes in and closes the door. I mean, was absolutely fantastic. 3 innings, 3 hits, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts, danced out of trouble as well. I mean, it was really, really impressive to see, which you go and you look at it now, and it's like, okay, well, seemed to be the right option because allowed 4 base runners in 3 innings, and again, got out of a couple of jams, punched out 5 Georgia Bulldogs as well. The lefty arms were really, really good against a dominant right-handed hitting Georgia team. You're going to see a right-handed arm tonight in Andreas Alvarez, but most importantly, I know what y'all spent a lot of time on is the fact of the best hitting team in the SEC scored 2 runs, and they won the baseball game.
Yeah, I mentioned it with Jacob earlier, but when you're tying the season low for the Dogs at 2 runs, they have not scored 2 runs since the when they lost in against Florida 2-8 on April 10th.
Man,
they don't score single digit runs often as it is. You hold them to 2 runs. Surely, for the hottest team in the SEC, you win, right?
Especially at home as well.
Yeah.
If I told you yesterday afternoon that Georgia hits 2 solo home runs and that's it, I tell you Auburn wins 5-2 at worst.
Yeah.
But then again, you tell me that Jake Marciano's on the mound, and it's like, okay, I probably do believe this result because Auburn just refuses to give him any sort of run support.
He's got to owe somebody in that hitting room money or something.
It's got to be something along that. I mean, Mason McCrane, a leadoff double into the gap, gets to third on a wild pitch and an RBI ground out from Eric Guevara. And that was it.
Yeah.
Silenced after that. You had three hits after that. And then Chase Frelick and Chris Remberts also had hits in that inning. You had one hit after that.
In eight innings.
And it was an Ethan Bingaman.
Yeah, I mean, that was the... And there was opportunities. We mentioned it earlier with you had the shortstop for Georgia legitimately do the Michael Jordan
right.
on that, just a line out. But the hitting support from Marciano when he has... I don't... Again, I told Jacob this. I wouldn't say Jacob was correct in his assessment with best start of the year. Close, though. It was pretty good. And if, you know, it's just two solo shots are the difference between winning and losing.
Two changeups that you want back. And when I tell you something like that, it's like, oh, great. Okay, well, he walked a batter, gave up a single, runners on first and second, and then there's that pitch. Nope, two solo shots hit to just about the same part, maybe not
one
as much.
One was right over
one
our
was,
heads.
Yeah, right. If it was, 15 feet shorter, you would have been able to save me and be the hero and catch it and protect me.
Now, would I have done the head top at you just to look cool for the bleacher creatures that were in front of us? Probably.
I mean, that or you ladies all right?
Yeah, there's a couple opportunities for that.
There were, but again, I mean, this offense is so feast or famine, which is not necessarily how you want it, but it's kind of how it's been all season long, which gives you confidence. Funny enough, for the remainder of the season, just based off of what the history of this season has told us of, okay, you don't go out and you look good on one night, you're going to look pretty good on the next. And hopefully Auburn's able to do that for the remainder of the series. Again, tonight, a 7 o'clock start once again inside Plainsman Park. It'll be Andreas Alvarez that gets the start on the bump for the Tigers. And, I mean, just safe to say, you got to give this Auburn fan base something to cheer about in terms of offensive run production. Find ways to create chaos on the base paths. The only other single outside the first inning was an infield hit where the third baseman tried to barehand it and couldn't do so. That was the only other time, and that wasn't even finding a barrel. You mentioned it. A couple of line outs, but, man, leadoff walks in, was it the fifth and the sixth inning where Auburn did not score? And, of course, we have all of our notes when it comes to high school, and as soon as it happened, you were reading them out to us of, okay, tell us what leadoff walks mean, and it was like, yeah, come around and score.
It was the Jack Hudden was made sure to ask me specifically. It was like, hey, have you heard my stat? I'm like, but have I heard your stat? I believe your stat.
Have I heard numbers from Mr. Jack Hudden? Yeah, but again, leadoff walks come around and score more than 50% of the time, 55 to 60% of the time based off of the different level that you play. But funny enough, it's like 10% more than leadoff singles because that's what just walks do
psychologically
to hurt your psyche. But Auburn did that in back-to-back innings and was not able to score. And so Auburn, a part of the 40% that just did not bring runs across. And you just didn't put up good ABs. And especially not with runners in scoring position. You didn't have too many opportunities, but leadoff walks, sacrifice bunts, get them on, and all of a sudden it's three pitch strikeouts and then a four pitch strikeout. And it's like, all right, well, and you are giving Georgia credits. Again, Matt's got the four inning save, essentially the right arm that we were trying to watch. Again, we were up on the War Eagle wall all last night, and you're seeing the 94 mile an hour fastball, but then it was like, man, it's sitting at 88 and it's just fooling hitters. And it was obviously the cutter that he loves throwing, but four innings of one hit ball, one walk, and six strikeouts. I mean, completely closed the door, and now it's time for Auburn to return the favor.
Yeah, but I think the one thing that I'm worried about when looking at this team is that, yeah, you're hoping that you're going to be able to course correct your offense, looking at which has seemed to be the trend after a loss for the Auburn Tigers. My problem and my worry is that, well, yeah, George is also going to try and do that.
Yeah.
If you ask the Dogs hitting staff, if you ask Daniel Jackson, I know he had a home run, but if you ask that coaching staff, you go, hey, what, you know, did you guys have a good night? They'd say, no, we scored two runs. And that's what they build their entire philosophy there in Athens. And I just think that they are going to come swinging. So you lost the rock fight. Now you have to win a shootout.
Yeah, you feel like just by the way that baseball works. And again, Auburn's pitching staff is good enough to not allow what I'm about to say. And funny enough, that Auburn is number one in the country in team ERA, and you just play one of the highest scoring teams in all of college baseball, and your team ERA goes down and you lose. That's pretty impressive, giving up, again, two runs in game one. But just based off of how baseball is played, after a rock fight, after a 2-1 type of game, you feel as if one of these, whether that's tonight, whether that's tomorrow, Auburn's going to have to go out and win one of those 10-8 baseball games.
It's going to be a football score.
And you, again, you hope that Auburn's pitching staff is good enough not to allow that, and maybe that is the case, but you've seen that, just the trend of how baseball works and how just the way that SEC series works and the overcorrection in terms of what you try and do at the plate, and there's so much more focus, and you're going to try and rally. Auburn's got to find a way to do that. It starts with Andreas Alvarez of putting up zeros yet again. I am interested to see, because again, Auburn threw two lefties last night in Marciano and Sanders. And again, you're two pitches away, two changeups away from blanking Georgia. And I know that's not directly how that works, but only two long balls. Now it's a right-handed arm and Andreas Alvarez that gets the start against, again, a heavy right-handed hitting lineup team. The changeup's going to have to be really good for Alvarez, the lively fastball as well. Makes it to where Petrovic on Saturday afternoon gives me a lot of confidence, just based off of his ability to work with that changeup. If he can get right-handed hitters out in front, that gives you confidence. But it starts tonight, trying to even up the series so that way Petrovic can go out and do what he does. And every time he steps to the mound, it feels like it's a rubber game that he's trying to go win a series.
Yeah, I mean, it's get to Saturday is kind of the idea. I just, looking ahead to tonight, you know, you have the Josh Donaldson Wall of Fame induction ceremony. Something tells me that that's going to get the boys fired up, ready to go. I feel like tonight is the shootout when looking at it, with both these teams are going to try and course correct and give everything they can. Georgia to win the series, Auburn to tie it up, because I don't think either team wants a rubber match necessarily.
No, I think Auburn would be a little more excited for it. Georgia wants to go ahead and take this series just so that way it's okay. Well, whatever happens on Sunday is what it is. And if Auburn were to get that game on Sunday, you feel like it would be one of the few times that both fan bases are kind of just, all right, yeah, sure, that worked out.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, trying to look kind of at what Auburn does after losses, where you have certain ones obviously they are better after losses. Outside of that, like, bad stretch between when you get swept by Alabama and Georgia Tech, which I mentioned in the first hour, that is the last time Auburn has lost back-to-back games.
That is a wild thought.
Yeah, it was the end of March.
Wow.
It's now midway through May, officially.
It's been a great problem to have. But yeah, you mentioned it. After a 3-2 loss against Arkansas, you come back and win at 8-3. You get run ruled by Jacksonville State in the midweek. You come back and you respond with 12. After a 5-4 loss against Kentucky, you score 11. Sorry.
Yeah, run rule. I know I was going to do the exact same thing you were going to do. And you look at it with, you know, Oklahoma, you lose 1-2. You come back 14-4. I'm sure Butch Thompson and the Tigers want to recreate that exact two box scores.
Yeah, only play 8 innings. I wouldn't necessarily complain about that. After a 4-3 loss against Texas A&M, you come back with 10 against UAB. After only putting up 3 against Mississippi State, your pitching staff comes to life. You win it 5-4 with Chase Frelick's solo shot in the ninth. But back-to-back losses and only putting up 1 run of offense as well, definitely something that Auburn looks to correct. After a 4-1 loss against Jacksonville State, now a 2-1 loss against the Georgia Bulldogs. 7 o'clock inside Plainsman Park. And while we have a minute, again, just looking at some of the other SEC baseball series going on right now. I know y'all dove into a lot of the game ones last night.
Yes.
Another high scoring group of games. I mean, my goodness.
Football score in College Station.
Might as well. It's halftime in College Station right now. And it's unfortunate that Auburn couldn't have taken game one, because you almost, other than Alabama coming back and beating Ole Miss, everything that you needed in terms of a double bye went in your direction, it felt like. And so Auburn now has a little bit more ground to make up just based off of what they were unable to do last night.
Yeah, you mean you look at it with Mississippi State winning Texas. There was a second there where it was like, there's no way they're going to. They were like 1-1.
It was like 1-1 to the fourth or something.
Yes. I showed you all the score last night and I was like, there's no way, right? Like, but that, which would have been just hilarious. But yeah, looking at some of those things, I think that the biggest thing tonight, obviously Auburn win,
But if Ole Miss, they were ahead in that game for a while. If the Rebs can go and beat Alabama and force it to a game three, that would make Auburn fans a whole lot easier when it comes to getting that double bye.
Looking at, never mind, Florida beat LSU. I was thinking, yeah, it was the other way around, and I was like, man, sitting there talking about Chris Gordy yesterday saying LSU needs to go win out and win the entire thing in Hoover. It was a good start, but no, Florida outlasts LSU. Mississippi State, Texas A&M, game two on a 7 o'clock first pitches tonight. You mentioned Ole Miss and Alabama needing to get, would love to see a rematch on that side of things and enforce a rubber game. Auburn taking on Georgia Friday night, 8 o'clock Eastern time, 7 o'clock Central time. What fun is it? It's hopeful to be, if you can't make it out to Plainsman Park, Wings 94.3 is the place to be. A lot going on in our family of radio stations here this afternoon, here this evening. A lot of baseball and hopefully a lot of cheering. Flipping over from 94.3 to 96.3. We'll continue to tell you more about that. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the show. Dive into a little bit more of Auburn High School baseball as well, and tell you everything you need to know about this weekend. What a fun weekend it's set up to be. Auburn needs to find a way to win at least one, if not force a rush at the win on Saturday afternoon. We'll talk to you more about it when we return here and come back and wrap up the show on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up the Friday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate everybody for being here with us and letting us be a part of your Friday afternoon, the start of what is supposed to be a very, very fun weekend. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin here with you in the studio, bringing you down here to the 4 o'clock hour. And what a really fun show it's been so far this afternoon. Got a little bit of everything. Talked Auburn baseball, talked Auburn football, talked kind of just SEC football in general, also a little bit of basketball news in there as well. We mentioned the quotes earlier about Stephen Pearl hoping to finalize a couple of pieces, and I know y'all were able to talk about the new Lithuanian guard as well, the wing Montas Rubstavičius, I believe is the way. Don't quote me on that, but we'll call him Montas for now. And again, a lot of excitement on that side of things. That's been in the works for a really, really long time. College basketball or college sports, the 5 for 5, tried putting a little bit of a barrier between that, but a lot of excitement making its way to the Plains and Stephen Pearl. We talked Auburn baseball, as we mentioned, about the game one results and what they need to do in game two. Also talked some revenue. Also talked some expectations in year one for college football head coaches. And so a little bit of everything here on this free-for-all Friday edition of On the Line. And what a weekend it's set up to be. We mentioned Wings 94.3, Auburn High baseball as well on 96.3. Should be a whole lot of fun. What more could you ask for here as you make your way through the heat of the Alabama summer?
Yeah, it'll be exciting to be able to tune into that if you're listening to it. If you want to hear Auburn High School, they'll be on 96.3 W Lee. I'm about to head to SEMO Field to meet up with Jacob Goins, just kind of hang out with him and see how it goes there. They take on the Central Phoenix City Red Devils. That's going to be just an exciting matchup there. Winner goes to the state championship.
Yeah, I need Auburn to pull this one out just from the standpoint of one Auburn school being able to beat another Phoenix City school.
We got to get the get back.
Get the get back.
The academy. We'll tell Tommy Carter and the boys, and they'll fire it up for y'all.
In case they needed more motivation, just say like, hey, do it for the academy, and I'm sure they'll be very happy to do that.
Win it for the Gipper.
What is that?
That's Ronald Reagan.
Oh,
he said that in a movie.
Yikes!
Did I just out-old you there? I think I might have.
You did, yeah. Ugh. You've shown your youth, but you've also shown your wisdom here this afternoon and throughout the weeks. What more could we ask for?
Thank you.
Man. But what a fun show it has been, man. Again, a whole lot. You're hitting talking season right now in terms of football. A lot of the conversations that we had here in hour number two are going to carry a lot of weight. We're going to continue to dive into year one head coaches. We're going to dive into post-spring win totals, postseason. We're going to do our own rankings. We're going to do what we always do in terms of quarterback rankings, running back rankings, just offensive line rankings, and where does Auburn stack up with all of these. And so talking season officially upon us, but we're continuing to hope to have a whole lot of baseball conversations as well, as you would imagine it would, as you finish up the regular season here this weekend. You make your way to Hoover, and regardless of where you stand, regardless of how many games you play, it won't be the last time that you're going to see this team play in Plainsman Park, and hopefully not the only weekend you'll see this team play in Plainsman Park, with the weekend regional and a super regional if they can get that far, and then make their way to Omaha, Nebraska, if that would be obviously how we would draw it up. Hopefully it would draw it up as well, and you're going to need a little bit more. That feast or famine offense for the Auburn Tigers. Does Auburn even the series here this evening?
No, I would say there's a 50-50 chance. But I've been told not to say that. So I don't know why.
I mean, I think we're not known for our math skills, and so that's why we brought you on, to give us probability and statistics. And so
sure,
there is one of those teams that will win tonight.
Yeah, no, I think Auburn gets it done tonight, and then going into the rubber match, I think with Petrovic on the mound, I think that Auburn just has one of their game three offensive explosions and wins it by, I'd say, more than two runs.
Okay. Wouldn't complain
about
that.
That's a take there.
That is a take right there. Jacob gave his take of Marciano having his best outing. Not sure it was quite to that point, but still a pretty dang good one. Auburn's offense hoping to respond here tonight, and you know Georgia's is as well. 96.3 W Lee is where you need to be here this afternoon. Make your way, flip back and forth, 96.3 and 94.3 throughout our family of radio stations here this afternoon. Tripp predicts Auburn to win tonight and tomorrow. I think I fall in that boat as well. A lot of excitement coming to the Plains here this weekend. I hope you're going to find a way to be a part of it one way or another. And you know we're going to be back to talk about it right here between 2 and 4 on ESPN 106.7. For Jacob Goins, for our good buddy Tripp Upton, I'm Christian Griffin. Have a great weekend. Stay safe, and we'll talk to you later.